Good evening. In looking through a pile of pamphlets the other day, I came across a small, semi-centennial booklet published in 1931 by the town of Wellesley, Massachusetts. The pamphlet states that Wellesley separated from its neighbor town of Needham in 1881 and gives the following reason. First, says the little book, Needham and Natick parted from Dedham. Then there was much controversy and argument between the eastern and western parts of the town, and after some wire pulling in the legislature, the western region finally separated from Needham proper and became the town of Wellesley. The pamphlet pays tribute to the famous old Wells family, the Honeywells, Roger W. Babson, and Henry F. Durant, who established Wellesley College. It mentions with pride a plaque on the library building, the site where years ago lived Dr. Morton, famous for his use of ether. And a glowing tribute is made to Catherine Lee Bates, author of America the Beautiful, now used by WBZ at the beginning of each broadcast day. The noted biographer Gamaliel Bradford is also mentioned, but there isn't a single word in that semi-centennial program about Mr. William Emerson Baker, the eccentric millionaire who more than anyone else was responsible for the squabbles that led to the final separation of Needham and Wellesley. To call Mr. Baker eccentric is to make an understatement. Retiring from a profitable sewing machine business after the Civil War, Mr. Baker came to Needham and purchased 11 private farms covering more than 1,000 acres. This wild open section of farm country was divided by Grove Street in what is now both Needham and Wellesley and was bounded for 4 miles on the south and west by the Charles River. A high ridge of rock containing numerous caves and gullies gave the place its official name, Ridge Hill Farms. But after the 1,000 acres had been landscaped and 10,000 trees, shrubs, and flowers of every description had been planted, it became popularly known as Baker's Gardens. At the entrance to the gardens, Mr. Baker had a double row of flowering portulacas 700 feet long. He sent to the far corners of the earth for lilies and tropical plants, and his mosaic garden, fashioned from tens of thousands of living blooms, was the floral sensation of this country. I guess the greatest exploit of old man Baker was the construction of Lake Sabrina. In 1871, Baker noticed a small spring which he dug out and made into a pool 100 feet in diameter. Then a dowser with a witch hazel stick located several other underground springs, so dikes were built and eventually a new lake was formed nearly 2 miles long. This large body of water was 35 feet above the level of the Charles River. Baker stocked it with speckled trout and black bass. If you have read Gamaliel Bradford's delightful book, Early Days in Wellesley, you may remember how Baker's artificial lake got its name. The dapper little millionaire used to tramp through the train between the Wellesley and the Back Bay stations, handing out slips of paper on which the passengers were requested to write a name for his new lake. Mr. Bradford's father was on the train one day when Baker came through, and on his slip of paper, the elder Bradford wrote, "I suggest you call your duck pond Lake Slopover." However, Sabrina was finally chosen. The name still stands for what's left of Baker's artificial lake out there in Wellesley. In my search for material for this broadcast on Baker's Gardens, I found a few old stereoscopic photographs of great interest. One shows the magnificent arched bridge which Baker bought at the Philadelphia Centennial and had moved to Wellesley. Another view shows the tall 7-story brick tower in the base of which Baker kept a stable of stuffed horses. By pressing a button, he could make the nags roll their eyes, switch their tails, and precisely on the stroke of 12 noon, all the horses would lower their heads and automatically eat a bucket of oats and a handful of hay. Well, at least they appeared to anyway. A third photo that I found shows the elaborate zinc boathouse, covered on all four sides with costly oil paintings. I haven't, I'm sorry to say, been able to locate any photos of the Lady of the Lake, the first amphibious steamboat ever operated in New England. This was a queer contraption invented by Baker himself, and local workmen put the thing together right there in the gardens. She was 55 feet overall, had a big steam boiler, and carried 40 passengers at a time. She was propelled by a series of wooden floats attached to endless chains, and at Mr. Baker's command, the lumbering craft would steam straight for the shore, and then, with much clanking of chains and gears and splashing of mud and water, she would rise, dripping and wobbling, to climb up the steep bank and go careening with clouds of smoke and cinders up and down the driveways between the 700-foot beds of portulacas and geraniums. Folks came from far distant points just to see that steamboat clamber up the banks of Lake Sabrina and go puffing off among the pine trees. Now, there were hundreds of stereoscopic views made at Baker's Gardens, and if you should run across a double view of the Lady of the Lake, I'd like very much to see it. Among other things that William Emerson Baker was famous for was his celebrations. On the slightest provocation, he would issue thousands of invitations to people all over the country to come and partake of his generous hospitality. He housed his guests in a whacking big 400-room hotel, and the food and drinks were on the house. He had a fleet of 30 coaches and carry-alls to meet the trains in Needham and Wellesley, and when these proved inadequate, he hired the old Colony Railroad to lay a spur track from their main line right up to the gates of his garden. It was nothing uncommon for 5,000 tourists to arrive in a single day, and on one memorable occasion, Baker invited a regiment of 1,000 soldiers from Maryland to be his guests for 3 days. He had a crew of carpenters build a series of wooden tents so the soldiers would feel at home, and in several of the tents, he installed a 10-foot bar. The gentlemen from down south had such a good time at Baker's Gardens, they stayed 3 weeks, consuming thousands of roast chickens, hams, and pots of baked beans, and over 500 cases of champagne and beer. When old man Baker saw hundreds of empties lying in the grass and flower beds, he ordered his caretakers to collect the bottles in bushel baskets, and they were set in cement to form a huge bottle monument 25 feet high. That glassy affair stood for years just off Grove Street at the entrance of an artificial cavern appropriately named the Cave of Departed Spirits. Now, every other story about Baker's Gardens is eclipsed by the incidents leading up to and including the $50,000 funeral that Baker staged for Grizzly Bear. Here's how it all happened. Baker had several bear pits on his estate, but they were for small cinnamon bears. Then, hearing that a giant grizzly had been captured in Colorado, he purchased it, built an enormous bear pit, and sent a specially constructed freight car out west to fetch the bar back to Wellesley. The cage was handsomely carved, painted bright red, and decorated with gold leaf. A month before the bear arrived, Baker issued 10,000 invitations to the coming-out party of Billy Bruin. Most of the invitations were accepted. Mayors, governors, politicians, and just plain people came from all parts of New England, New York, and Pennsylvania to welcome the big black bear. But while he was being transferred from his handsome private car to the magnificent new brick and steel cage at Wellesley, the grizzly ripped off the door, gave a horrendous growl, leaped to the ground, and disappeared into the nearby woods. Children screamed and women fainted by the dozens. Police and soldiers ran after the bear, but he had a good start, and it was hours before he was seen again. Baker immediately offered $10,000 for the capture of the bear, and for 10 days the newspapers were filled with stories of his alleged appearance in all parts of New England. It's true, he did kill a calf in Natick, and he chased some woodchoppers in Quincy. And then, poor Billy Bruin was finally found floating in the surf near Nantasket Beach. Mr. Baker went into mourning and announced that a great funeral for the grizzly would be held. He told reporters he was going to spend $50,000 on the bear's funeral. First, he telegraphed to Denver and asked that a detachment of 100 soldiers be sent east from Colorado to fire a salute over Billy Bruin's grave. Next, he commissioned two famous taxidermists to prepare the huge body, and a well-known seamstress was hired to make a shroud from yards and yards and yards of royal purple silk. A huge wooden box was built, and an East Boston sheet metal company was engaged to make a copper coffin 10 feet long and 4 feet wide to go inside the wooden box. After Mr. Baker chose a fitting resting place for Billy Bruin, he hired a crew of expert stone cutters to come up from Quincy to cut and dig and blast a great rectangular hole in one of the ledges at Ridge Hill Farms. And on the 8th of July, 1874, the 500-pound grizzly bear, wrapped in his royal purple shroud and encased in his costly copper coffin, was lowered into the ledge, while 50 bands played the funeral dirge and 20,000 amazed men, women, and children looked on. Then the 100 soldiers from Denver, Colorado, raised their rifles and fired 3 volleys over the bear's grave. Granite chips were then shoveled on top of the box, earthen sods were added, and a small maple tree was set out to mark the spot. I photographed that tree some 20-odd years ago, but on a recent visit to what's left of Baker's Gardens, I was unable to find it. After the funeral service, a great barbecue was held for the hoi polloi, but 3,000 especially invited guests were tendered a banquet by Mr. Baker. They feasted on big, thick steaks and broiled lobster, and all told, 1,000 cases of champagne were drunk in honor of the late departed Billy Bruin. When darkness descended on Wellesley on that hot Wednesday in July 1874, the vast crowd of mourners were treated to the most spectacular display of fireworks yet seen in New England. The final set piece was a towering pillar of red fire in the shape of a grizzly bear waving an American flag. I guess Mr. Baker told the truth when he said the bear's funeral cost him a cool $50,000. Not all of the notables invited were able to attend, And among the letters of regret was this one from 296 Beacon Street, Boston. Dear Mr. Baker, it said, many thanks for your polite invitation to attend the obsequies of the lamented plantigrade. I'm sorry that I shall be unable to be present on such a melancholy occasion, as I have a great respect for bears, since the two female ones taught the sons of Belial that they must not be rude to elderly persons. I think a loose bear or two might be of real service in the city of Boston, and I regret the loss of an animal who might have done so much as a moral teacher for the young people of our city and its suburbs. I am, dear sir, very truly yours, Oliver Wendell Holmes. Well, folks, that's just part of the story of William Emerson Baker, the eccentric millionaire who turned his Ridge Hill farms on the boundary line of Needham and Wellesley into an amusement park of 1,000 acres that nobody wanted. In spite of the heavy taxes he paid, neither town wanted his snake pits, monkey cage, bear dens, and underground tunnels. The tens of thousands who flocked there on fete days were a noisy nuisance. Hence the squabbles over the town line. Today, Baker's Gardens is but a dim memory in the minds of the oldest inhabitants. But out near Grove Street, you can still see traces of the garden's glory. A bit of Sabrina Lake, some stone pillars, and part of the underground grotto. One Wellesley resident tells me that his rumpus room was fashioned from one of the bear dens. And over a fireplace mantel, I recently saw one of the guns that was fired in the final salute to Billy Bruin, the grizzly bear.